Welcome to On Top of PR with Jason Mudd, presented by ReviewMaxer.
Hello, and welcome to On Top of PR. I'm your host, Jason Mudd with Axia Public Relations, and I'm glad you're here because we've got a great show today. Let me welcome in our guest, Casey Mink. Casey, welcome to the show.
Hi, Jason. Thanks for having me.
Oh, I'm glad you're here. And today we're here to talk about workplace writing skills. Specifically, Casey Mink is co-founder of Bold Type, a woman-owned communication skills training firm that focuses on workplace writing skills. She's led writing workshops for organizations including Kellogg, Sephora, and MasterCard. And today our topic is best practices for internal communications. And so that's what we're going to talk about today. Let's see. And also, just so our listeners know ahead of time, I usually don't mention this till the end, but you've got a special offer at boldtype.us/email resources. Is that correct?
That's right. We put together a packet of a few of our favorite email resources. There's a recorded workshop in there, a checklist, some other things. So definitely check that out.
Awesome. That sounds great. So Casey, tell me a little about your inspiration for starting Bold Type.
Absolutely. Yeah. My business partner and I both have backgrounds as English teachers. So we have both taught in different programs and schools around Georgetown University. She's been at the School of Continuing Studies and the McDonough School of Business. I've been at the business school. I currently teach in the School of Nursing over at the medical campus. And then we both got into teaching professional teams how to do their workplace writing tasks. So we really like to try to stay on that line between academia and workplace writing. We find that people come out of school not always with all the training that they need to do their workplace writing tasks. And then the same thing on the other side, trying to teach them the skills that they'll need for their workplace writing once they get there. So we kind of have a foot in both worlds. And, you know, when you're in the university, there's this great thing called the Writing Center. If you have a paper you're working on and you could use someone to talk it through with or some strategy, you can take it to the Writing Center and a tutor will sit down with you and look at your paper and go over it. And you can learn writing skills that way. But people in the workplace don't always really have that. So we've brought a lot of our Writing Center tutoring training to workplace writing skills. So that's kind of the cross zone that our company sits in.
Okay. I got it. Let's set the table, Casey. What is the problem? What is the issue that you solve? Like, so our audience is going to be marketing and communications leaders at, you know, medium to large corporations. What is the need that they have that you're fulfilling?
Absolutely. So I've ended up with a little bit of a practice area, a niche with PR shops and communication firms. And I love working with those groups because we can kind of jump right in at a higher level. So with those particular teams and the writing that they do, we're not teaching them rudimentary writing skills. They're already strong writers. They write a ton. A lot of them have communications and journalism and media studies backgrounds. So they're strong writers. Their problem is more that they are writing a ton of stuff every day and every week, and that they're rapidly task switching between different types of documents throughout the day. They might be writing in the voice of very different clients from minute to minute, very different context for very different platforms. So for them, it's more switching between tasks and sort of getting things done faster rather than building any sort of rudimentary writing skills. So that's kind of how we help that audience in particular.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. So I find that, when I'm speaking to universities or I'm speaking to even colleagues, especially kind of more entry level colleagues, I'm always emphasizing that they need to understand at least the difference between a goal and an objective and a strategy and a tactic, you know, so they can might start to think, because, you know, most students right out of college are very tactical driven. And they're very much aware of what a goal is, but they don't really understand how to set a measurable objective, and they don't really understand, how to think like a strategist or how to be a strategist and how to become a trusted advisor. And some of that comes with time and with age and things like that for sure. The second or third thing I typically lean on for them is just, you know, you're not a great writer yet, and even though you might hear you are or think you are, you know, most of the time, your writing is not going to be ready for the profession. Now, I will say, I've gotten a little bit distant from working directly with interns and directly with entry-level employees at my company, but the work I see that's being produced by them after it's at least peer-reviewed by their manager and then copy-edited by a copy editor, and I see it live on our blog or something like that, it's pretty good. So I don't know if it's our internal process or if students are getting better or what is our entry-level professionals have gotten better, but I see where there's this need to kind of, you write when you're in college, I guess, and you get to a point. But then as you get more experienced, you know, there's higher expectations or there's a different level of sophisticated in your writing. What do you see, Casey? Did you see some trends like that as well?
Yeah, absolutely. So I love what you said. You're not a great writer yet. That's an awesome, I might borrow that one. I would also say for anybody, like, you're not a great writer alone. So I think one thing with writing skills is that everyone has this image of people writing or editing like alone in a tower and just like scribing away. But actually, you know, I'm a writing teacher. And when I send things to my business partner and say, look this over, it's immediately obvious to her, like, you don't need this word here. You don't need this whole sentence here. And it would never be obvious to me because I wrote it. So one of the things we try to teach everyone, not just junior staff, is that writing is really social and you need other people to look at your work and you need feedback from real humans, not just you like going over your draft alone again and again. So yeah, you're not a great writer alone. You need other people to react to your draft with you and give you that perspective. As far as people joining the workforce newly from school, I think one thing that we hear a lot from managers and the people that are bringing us in and asking us to do training with their younger staff is there's sometimes a lack of judgment. That's the word that we tend to come back to. This sense of just good judgment about workplace communications, etiquette, things like that. And that's because a lot of those skills are not things that anyone sits down and says, like, here's the tablet of the golden rules of professional communication that everyone knows and agrees on. It's right. More a skill that you, wouldn't that be nice? You just pick it up by sort of like watching what other people are doing. And so a lot of people that are newer employees, like their managers feel frustrated that they're maybe sending emails that are sloppy or unprofessional, too casual. They sound like text messages, you know, all those different things, just lots of different issues with judgment is like kind of the word that we always come back to. So that's one. Yes. Discernment. Another great one. Yeah. That's a common complaint that we hear.
Okay. Okay. That makes sense. So in my notes, I have that we're going to cover email as an essential career skill. So, you know, I don't know if I had a time machine, maybe I'd go back in time and, you know, stop certain historic events from happening that were really bad. And one of those might be just getting rid of email altogether. You know, that might be on my time machine journey. So tell me about why email is an essential career skill. And then we can get more in details about why email sucks.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, so first of all, it's true when I tell people what I do, sometimes I'll sort of jokingly say like, oh, I teach people to write better emails. And then they'll sort of jokingly say like, oh, you should really come talk to some people on my team. And then we're both kind of like, but it's not really a joke, right? Everyone has a lot of complaints about emails and it's a huge pain point. So one of the really interesting things that about this email writing task is that it's a huge part of every professional's day. Every job description you find on the internet asks for excellent verbal and written communication skills, and email is a huge chunk of that written communication skills piece. It's happening all the time. It's one of the main ways that we communicate, especially now. But for some reason, most students don't have a semester or a year-long course in college that's like email best practices. Instead, they're writing 5-paragraph essays with, you know, intro and thesis and references, and then they pop out into the workforce and it's like, okay, now spend 3 to 4 hours of every one of your working days writing this kind of document, an email. And so it's really strange that it's such a big part of everyone's life, but they're still doing a task that was more relevant, you know, 100 years ago before that was invented. So when we ask people in our email workshop, we ask every group, you know, did you ever have formal training on email writing? And most people say no. There's always one or two people that are like, yeah, actually, I've gotten to go to a really great seminar before. And it's, you know, good for them. But most of the people will say like, no, no one has ever given me any formal email training, either in school or at work. So then we follow up and say, well, how did you learn then? And they just, they usually, it's like people have to think for a minute and then they're like, well, I kind of like watched what other people were doing.
Right.
And if you think about other skills that take up that much of our day at work, it's sort of laughable to imagine that like people would just say like, oh, I don't know, just like see what your colleagues do. Like, the you know,
I've never like, thought of it that way, Casey, but you raise a good point for sure that we spend a lot of time, you know, on our email. Maybe as much time as we spend in meetings, and there's definitely, you know, content out there about how to run more efficient meetings. So talk to me a little bit about email best practices.
Yeah, absolutely. The one that, going back to that about the meetings, the one that really gets me is like MBA students in particular, they get so much training on giving presentations. So they come out and they're like these presentation superstars, but then like, they haven't learned how to write a good email. So it's just kind of funny.
That's true.
Yeah. Okay. So email best practices that we could go into. There's so many that I could share. One thing that kind of relates to that question of people not, you know, necessarily getting formalized training on emails is that people also don't tend to have formalized sets of rules within organizations around email etiquette. So one email trick from a big picture level, and then we can get into stuff that, you know, writers can do just on their own to send better emails, of course, is I would love it if teams within organizations would actually just take like a few minutes to sit down and set out what their own best practices are around emails for emailing each other and their clients.
So like email expectations?
Yeah. Yeah. So like you wouldn't believe if we ask people in a workshop, like, okay, we should respond to emails in a timely manner. And everyone's like, yes, we should. And so I say like, what's timely? Is it 1 hour, 2 hours, 48 hours before the end of the business day? And these are people from a same organization, even sometimes the same team. And we get different answers from everybody. So like there hasn't been a discussion of this is what we all do. This is what we all expect. So that's one thing I would love if teams could just kind of sit down and say like, here's what we do and here's why for some of those questions.
Is there a tool that we could ask you to share with our audience that's kind of like a email expectations worksheet that, you know, like a team could work through?
We should make one.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's do that.
We should make one. Yeah. We've been thinking about it because it would be so easy to send people off with a series of like 10 questions around expectations and they could just align on them. So yeah.
Is that something we could work on and add to the episode notes by the time this episode airs?
Yeah. Yeah. I think we could.
Yeah. Because
we have certain questions that come up quite often.
Yeah. We'll make it a PDF with your logo and contact information on it. And then if people work through it and they find benefit from it, they'll come back to you for more.
Yeah. This is a great, you know, getting me to actually work on that because we've been thinking about it for a while.
That's why I made you commit live here on a recorded.
Yes, thank you. So I'll appreciate that accountability later. Yeah.
You can send me hate mail later, right? Hate emails later. okay. So, tell me more best practices.
Yeah. So once we leave the level of the team and it's just down to you and you're writing your email on your own, you know, going back to the, like what we learn in school versus what we learn at work sort of thing, in school, we're all taught to really write our way into things, by which I mean, if you think of like a typical academic essay, you're going to start really broad since the beginning of human civilization, right? And you like kind of funnel down to your main point, and your big takeaway might come somewhere near the end. But in any sort of workplace communication, you want to flip that over. And an acronym that we love that we teach in all our workshops is BLUF. BLUF stands for bottom line up front. Jason, have you ever heard that one before?
I have not ever heard that before.
Okay. It's really popular with military communicators. So sometimes if we have veterans in our classes or something, they're like, oh yeah, I know the BLUF. But we're trying to bring it to the, you know, the corporate community as well. So BLUF, bottom line up front, it just means you come in and you immediately say like, what is the main high level takeaway from this communication? And then you can go back and say, and here's the background and here's the details and here's how we got here. And if you want more details, they're attached, but getting to the main point, like right up top, rather than, you know, the, again, the way we think our way into things might be like, I'm writing an email and I'm thinking like, well, I had a lot of meetings leading up to this conclusion and I did a lot of research and I was going to send you this last Thursday, but now I finally got the time to sit down and write this email. Nobody cares about that part, you know? So even if you think that way on the page, make sure you go back and delete that stuff that you might've like written your way in kind of thing. Because that's a big waste of time for your readers. So that's one.
Yeah. I was talking to somebody recently who teaches people how to be better public speakers. And they were saying like the worst thing you can do in a conversation and especially on stage is like, you know, I was talking to somebody last week. Was it Thursday or Tuesday? I don't remember which. I think it was Thursday. Nope. It had to be Tuesday, you know, and they're just going through this whole thing. And they're like, and who was it I was talking to? It was that guy. What's his name? You know, whatever. And they're just sitting there and you're just like, oh my gosh, you know, who cares? It doesn't matter to me what day it was. It doesn't matter to me who you're talking to. Get to your point, right? And they're like, the worst thing you do is do that in conversations. But even worse than that is doing it on stage in front of an audience, right? So anyway, Casey, that was a great tip. I'm looking forward to hearing more. We have to hit our halftime break here real quick. And on the other side, I'll share what I've heard from military people about communications as well. And maybe that'll be helpful for our conversation today.
Sounds good.
We'll be right back on the other side. More with Casey Mink.
You're listening to On Top of PR with your host, Jason Mudd. Jason is a trusted advisor to some of America's most admired and fastest growing brands. He is the managing partner at Axia Public Relations, a PR agency that guides news, social, and web strategies for national companies. And now, back to the show.
Welcome back to On Top of PR. I'm Jason Mudd with Axia Public Relations. We want to thank ReviewMaxer for their sponsorship of our podcast, and we want to bring back Casey to the episode. So Casey, we just ended, you gave a tip about that they use in the military. I did not serve and didn't have the pleasure of serving in the military, but one tip that I've heard that the military uses that I borrow often and often when I'm mentoring and training others is in the military, I'm told they say, you know, when you're speaking to a group or when you're communicating with your troops or whatever, you tell them what you're going to tell them, you tell them, and then you tell them what you told them. And I use that a lot, especially when I see somebody sending an email that's just all over the place. I'm like, you know, tell me what you're going to tell me, and then tell me what you told me again, you know?
Absolutely. I love that advice. Yeah. I love that advice.
So we have three more tips that you want to share today. And I'm eager to hear all three of those because, again, email is like my nemesis. We have, I have a love-hate relationship. I finally weaned myself off of like checking my email all day long to see what's in there. And so I guess let me ask you a question. You talked about, you know, having these covenants or these agreements with your own team of, you know, what responsiveness and timeliness looks like. I'm trying to move to where I'm only checking my email about three times a day. What do you think about that?
I think that's an excellent practice, depending on the business you're in. So if anyone is in a business that has, you know, super urgent things going on, this might be a little different. But most of us don't actually need to check our email more than two or three times, appointed times throughout the day. And the rest of the time, you really shouldn't be in there because it's a huge distraction. And it's one of the biggest sources of distraction at work. There's a pie chart floating around that shows it's like the biggest, you know, just interrupter of people. They're trying to do something else. They see a new email come in and suddenly it's like this very urgent feeling of like, oh, I need to address this. I need to answer this. But what if you were driving at that moment? Or what if you were in a meeting? You wouldn't have even seen it for an hour or two and nothing would have happened. So, definitely. I love your approach. Like if you can set times and not be in the inbox at all times, and I also know most people have more than one inbox. I certainly do. I have three that are usually open and kind of like, you know, haunting me. And I know people who have like 10 for different, you know, different roles that they are in. So
I can't even handle the one that I have. And in fact, my mom texted me recently and said, what's your personal email address? And I'm like, well, I think I check it like once a quarter. So you better send it to my work address, whatever it is. So anyway, yes, I'm in agreement with you that it's really hard to manage email. I'm trying to do 3 days a week or three times a day at appointed times, as you said it. And I worry and I sense in my experience that like whatever comes into my inbox next is what gets my attention when I'm just sitting in my inbox all day, as opposed to having a focus and a prioritization and whatnot. And I also sense my employees do it that way too. So I'm always constantly kind of reminding them to, pause their inbox, close their email, whatever they have to do, so they can focus on getting their priorities done, and they'll be much more happier and productive as well. But let's hear your remaining tips, please.
Yeah, sure. So one that I would recommend is keep everything you do forward friendly. So no matter who you're emailing with, you might know them really well, especially, we're kind of been on the topic of internal communications. You're emailing someone on your team, someone who might be your friend at work. Any email you send, there's a very permanent electronic record of it. And I want you to imagine that it can be on the front page of the New York Times, because even if you are utterly, adjacent to an interesting story, your emails really could end up on the front page of the New York Times if you just happen to be, so think of it that way. I guess a less shocking, a less intense example would be, think that every email you send could potentially be forwarded to your boss or your most persnickety client, account manager, whatever. You don't control where they go. So make sure that you wouldn't be embarrassed by anything you're sending. And tacked on to that, one of my biggest pet peeves is when people have sort of catty or snarky side conversations in email threads. So you've got a thread with 30 people, and then you've got your work friend sending you a reply to just you that's like, can you believe the rest of these people and what they're saying? Don't do that. Please. Yeah. It gives me so much stress. Please log out of your work email, go to your cell phone, and send your friend a text if you really need to, vent your feelings about the...
Casey, let me yes and what you just said for our audience. So first of all, one time I forwarded a presentation to one of my employees and I just said, hey, you can skip to 20 minutes in because the presenter is kind of all full of themselves and doesn't really get to any valuable content until 20 minutes in. And then eventually that email ended up being sent to the speaker when we were asking them to come and present at a conference or something like that. And I to this day don't know if they saw that comment that I wrote, because it was a long email string, right? But I was just like, no, this was for internal. So I made a mistake there, my bad. And I hardly ever do that. So that was a rookie mistake. But then, because it was a great speaker, obviously, or I wouldn't have shared it. But, I hate it when the first 20 minutes is just a commercial, right? And you don't really get to the meat. But then just recently, I've been an expert witness in a PR issue, and their internal emails that get released as part of discovery. And you would be amazed what some of these back and forth, even Google chat, the chat bot or whatever they're using, the internal communication chats were turned over as part of discovery. The email exchanges were turned over as part of discovery. And the way they're talking about the other party in this legal dispute through these emails is so off-putting, and just, and really paints a negative picture towards the person who wrote it, who is now going to have to, answer questions about this email exchange under oath, giving testimony in court. It's going to be so embarrassing for them, the things they said about this other person. And so it was just a reminder to me to talk to my team about this idea of, we think email is something that it's not, because it's so easy to screenshot text messages, so easy to forward emails, and we have to just really be on our best behavior. So I thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah. It's an important one. Another would be, just shifting gears to email etiquette, is, you should answer emails in a timely manner, which, as we said, can mean different things to different people. But, you should acknowledge them as fast as you can. But that doesn't mean you need to answer them in a substantive way.
Okay.
So what I mean is, if you see someone has emailed you with a bunch of questions and you're like, I don't have the answers to these questions, maybe this person is irritated with me, whatever the case may be, you should answer them right away and say, hi, I saw your email, and here's when I'll be able to answer your questions, even if that's 2 weeks from now. Yeah. But don't just hide from the email for 2 weeks, which is making the entire situation worse, making them more irritated, not setting expectations. Sure. So I think a lot of people, they won't answer an email right away because it might take them quite a bit of thinking. They might have to go do a task before they can answer. But it's fine to say hey, I got your email, and here's when I'll be able to put some time in on that, whatever it is. So I think it's important to understand the difference between acknowledging communications and substantively sitting there and answering everything in them.
Yeah. So I want to ask you another question about email. But first, as we're starting to wrap up, I want to remind our audience that we talked during the break about putting an article written by your business partner on that appeared on Forbes. We'll put a link to that in our episode notes about email management and inbox efficiency, for lack of a better discussion for now. Also, if you could find that chart about how much time people spend in their email box, we'd love to offer that as well.
Yeah.
And as we mentioned in the beginning, at boldtype.us/email resources, which we'll put a link to in the episode notes too, you have a special offer there for our audience, which we appreciate. And if people want to get a hold of you, they can reach you on LinkedIn or email you at casey@boldtype.us.
That's right. So yep.
Here's my question for you. two questions. One, how many questions should you pose to someone in a single email? And then at what point of the emailing back and forth do you just say, hey, too much back and forth, let's have a phone call, let's get on Zoom, let's have a meeting where we can do some of this back and forth? So kind of what are your recommendations there, Casey?
Yeah, absolutely. So on the first one, I usually am in the one ask for one email camp, because people just don't have a lot of mental bandwidth. And the more questions you ask them, especially if they're sort of like branching or building questions, like if you said yes above, then, you know, now this, it becomes very like cognitively difficult, and you're asking them to make a lot of decisions and do a lot of work. So if you can, I like the one ask one email rule. Sometimes I know there's scenarios where you need like seven questions answered all at once. In that case though, don't fold them into an email in a sneaky way. Like there's questions along the way, make a list with numbers and say, I need you to respond in line to each of these. And then it becomes almost like a little questionnaire that they're filling out in their response. Mm-hmm. People will often do a different color text with their answers, and they just like write in line, answer the questions. And it's like almost a questionnaire, but you wouldn't want to have 5 to 7 questions interspersed throughout a paragraph narrative. Yeah. Like, oh, and by the way, answer this, a little bit of narrative. And then like, oh, can you also tell me this? Yeah. That's horrible. You're asking people to search for things way too much. So what was the second half of your question again?
Sure. I'll just back and forth with you for a minute.
Yeah.
I love the numbered list. It drives me nuts when someone just sends me a bunch of questions and they're not numbered and, you know, whatever, makes it hard to follow through or follow it, I think. I've also found that you have to kind of assess the person you're communicating with, right, in their communication style, especially if it's communicating with leadership or with a client or something like that. But I know, like, busy clients, if you send them 3 questions in one email and they don't know the answer to one or more of them, they just won't respond at all. So I'd rather have my staff send 3 short emails back to back to back, even though that sounds obnoxious, where it's just one question, so that if they can answer that one question, you know, on their phone, between planes or on the train or between meetings, because, you know, we have to realize in our case, a lot of our clients are in meetings all day long. And so the last thing they want to do is read long paragraph emails. So, you know, if you have 3 questions, send them one question at a time so they can just simply reply back with a short answer and clear it out of their inbox. Yeah. My other question was, how many times do you go back and forth in emailing before you're like, too much emailing, let's just knock this out?
Yeah. So we have this very simple XY axis chart. I'm doing it, if you're watching the video, with my hands. If things are highly complex or highly emotional, they should be conversations.
Okay.
And the more simple and kind of unemotional things are, the better suited they are for email communication. So if you think you're going to need to do a lot of back and forth in order to like collaborate with someone, get on the same page, work something out, like it's complicated,
right,
maybe the email you're sending really should just be, we need to have a 15-minute Zoom. And that's the email.
Yeah.
Because those things happen a lot faster out loud. We can speak and listen faster than we can like sit there and draft an email. So complexity,
yeah,
and then anything emotionally charged, because there's a lot of room for tone to be misread in writing.
So Is that something else we can share on our
episode? It is. And let me just say, because I developed this in partnership with Sarah Gershman, who's the CEO of Green Room Speakers. Okay. So she's a speaking coach. So when we do a workshop together, we made this chart to say, like, when should you be speaking to someone and when should you be emailing them? Because those are our two areas of expertise. Yeah, yeah. I have to shout her out and say, we came up with this thing.
We'll do that for sure.
Together. That's all. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So I appreciate that very much. I'm going to date myself. I've been using email. I just, as you were talking, just calculated, I think for like almost at least 30 years and almost 35 years now. So that makes
a lot of email.
Really young. Yeah. I've sent a lot of emails, I'm sure. But my point is that it really has just dawned on me in the last 6 months to what you just said. If somebody sends you an email and it's emotional or turning defensive or something like that, don't respond. Get on the phone or meet with them in person, because it's going to be way more productive, that back and forth, which I think is so valuable. And, you know, there'll be constantly times where I'll be talking to my team and I'm like, imagine if we tried to have this 30-minute conversation over email. How long would that take, right? It takes so much longer. And my biggest pet peeve, Casey, is you have to proofread your emails, yes. You know, at least once. And you're wordsmithing and doing all this work, and it's like, I could have said this in 30 seconds, or I spent an hour now typing it, right? But my real point is that, you know, for example, I have a call today that's going to be a difficult conversation, and it started out as an email a week or so ago, and I just say, hey, let's get on calendars and work through this, you know? Obviously, it's not urgent or time sensitive, but it is a little bit of an emotional thing, and I just knew as I was reading my email response, I'm like, this isn't good. Now, of course, the reason it's taken a while to have the meeting is, you know, vacations and hurricanes and stuff like that. So, you know, but we don't have to solve this issue until the end of the year. So we have plenty of time, but I could tell it was going to escalate, right? And so I'm just like, bring it in. Let's have a real conversation, as opposed to trying to go back and forth through email where, like you said, it's a little bit emotional because, you know, money is involved and things like that. And we just want to make sure everybody's on the same page.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, email is for trading back and forth tiny pieces of a conversation. Yes. Yeah. And when you get horrible, like really badly written emails is when people try to have a whole conversation, a whole one-sided conversation in a single email. And they're just like, if you're thinking this, then no. And if you're going to say this, then here. And it's like a super long email. Email is meant for trading like manageable small pieces of information back and forth in a slow way. So if
in the day, it used to be a way to exchange attachments, right?
Sure,
files, right? And that was very helpful. Now we're all hopefully in the cloud. Had a little snafu this week where somebody sent me an attachment and it wasn't the most recent version. And so you're just like, oh, like I feel like I'm in the 90s again, you know? But they were like, no, I sent you the right version. And I'm like, okay, here's examples of where you didn't send the right version and how we have to now work backwards. So anyway, I'm so glad we no longer exchange drafts of attachments.
I have a feeling we're all going to be laughing about that even in like 5 years. Like, can you believe, you know, and it'll just be like AI will be managing the versions, like we'll be checking. And
well, I'm laughing at it now, and it was just painful on Tuesday
You're already laughing, yeah.
Yeah, I've been laughing at it for a while, especially when I know other people are still doing that. You know, because it used to be, Casey, for those that don't know this, you know, you'd send an email to 6 people and say, hey, I wrote this, please review it and give me feedback. And then you're in there changing it and making updates. And then you go to send it and you see 3 other people have already responded with other updates. And so you're like, I got to redo all my updates. So
I don't know about used to be. My students still do this all the time. They send their papers to 3 different professors and then they get 3 different versions back. And then they're like, oh no.
It makes me want to retire, honestly. If that came back as a practice, I'd be like, I'm out. So Casey, this has been a lot of fun. I appreciate you entertaining my thoughts and questions along the way. You know, I'm sure both of our email boxes are blowing up right now. And I would say, you know, stay focused on what we do best and the noise will take care of itself later. And, you know, we can always get to it, you know, later kind of thing. So that's at least my mantra right now.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing, especially your email forwarding horror stories, because I will definitely add those to my cache of scary stories to tell people when I'm cautioning them. Thank you for sharing those.
Yeah. And, you know, it was just a simple mistake. The person didn't do it maliciously. They just forgot that I said something, you know, unfavorable in the comments. And, you know, maybe if the speaker heard it, maybe they'll, you know, get some candid feedback from the audience, right? You know, I mean, at the end of the day, I remember one time I was on a webinar, I just mentioned this, and it was three young professionals who were first-time entrepreneurs looking for investors to come in and make an investment in this idea they had, and they invited me to be one of those investors. Well, 20 minutes into the presentation, there's three entrepreneurs. The second one is still reading through their or covering their bio and their background. These guys are like 2 years out of college at the most. And I've left the webinar, and the guy called me and he's like, "Hey, what happened? You know, whatever." And I said, "Man, I can't sit there for 30 minutes and listen to three entry-level college graduates tell me their background for that long. You know, you went to college here, you studied this, you did that, and you got this vision for this new company and you're looking for, you know, seed money to get started. That's all I need to know, you know."
Bottom line up front.
What's that?
Bottom line up front.
Yes, yes, exactly. And I just told him, I said, "You've got very, you know, wealthy, successful, busy individuals on this call." And that I voted with my feet. I walked out, you know, because it was just taking too long to get to it. And, you know, I hope that was a valuable lesson to them. And, you know, I didn't say no. I just said this isn't the right format for me because it was just taking too long. And I think what they were trying to overcome was their lack of experience. But we all knew that already. So just like you said, get to the bottom line up front would have helped them a lot. So, Casey, thank you again for being a guest on our show today. It was really glad to have you, and I look forward to staying in touch with you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, be well. My pleasure. And with that, we've had another episode of On Top of PR. Thank you for tuning in. If you know someone who would benefit from this message, and I've got to believe all of your colleagues would, please share this episode with them. They'll thank you and we'll thank you. And we appreciate you allowing us the opportunity to help you stay on top of PR. Have a great day.
This has been On Top of PR with Jason Mudd, presented by ReviewMaxer. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. And check out past shows at ontopofpr.com.